Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, and you are listening to CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Well, we have a great interview for you today on our podcast. The month of January is National Human Trafficking Prevention Month. You might ask, Mike, what does that have to do with healthcare professionals? Well, back in November at the Global Missions Health Conference, we heard a wonderful presentation from Ashley Chapman about how healthcare professionals can make a big difference in protecting patients against human trafficking. My regular co-host, Dr. Jeff Barrows, who for 2 years has been serving with me as CMDA's Senior Vice President of Bioethics and Public Policy, actually dedicated 15 years of his career in fighting against human trafficking within the intersection of trafficking and healthcare, as well as he worked on the rehabilitation of survivors of child sex trafficking. He also trained healthcare professionals on how we can recognize and assist victims of trafficking within our healthcare practices. So given his expertise and experience in this area, I asked Jeff to spend some time talking with our guest, Ashley, about the current state of human trafficking and how healthcare is at a critical moment in helping defeat this terrible tragedy. Let's listen in to their recent conversation.
This is Dr. Jeff Barrows, and I'm honored to host Ashley Chapman today on CMDA Matters. Ashley is a human rights lawyer and social entrepreneur. She has spent more than 20 years building solutions in education, business, nonprofit, government, healthcare, and community sectors to end human trafficking and protect vulnerable populations. Ashley presently serves as the founder and CEO of the Alliance for Freedom, Restoration, and Justice, which includes Altus Solutions, the Freedom Council, Engage Together, and Justice U. Previously, Ashley served as the co-founder and director of the Center for Global Justice at Regent University School of Law in Virginia. And that is actually where I met Ashley many years ago and recognized her to be an important pioneer in the fight against human trafficking. Ashley, welcome to CMDA Matters.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It is really exciting to be with you again and to just renew our conversation on why healthcare is so critically important in the fight to end human trafficking. But so grateful for all that this organization does and for you too, sir.
Well, I've been looking forward to this for those very reasons for several weeks now. So you've been passionate and engaged in fighting human trafficking for many years, Ashley. So I did want to begin by asking you to help define what exactly is human trafficking?
You know, the world really woke up to human trafficking, that phrase, about 20, 21 years ago now. We woke up to it globally here in the United States, and we didn't really wake up to it nationally till about 10 years ago. And I could give sort of the long legalese definition, but for purposes of just kind of an understanding definition, I'll say that human trafficking is the sale. It's the commercialization of human beings for three primary purposes: for labor, forced labor and services, for commercial sexual exploitation, and also for organs. And this is something that is a multi-billion dollar criminal industry each year that our International Labor Organization places at $150 billion industry per year, which is more than in most years Microsoft, Google, Apple, Berkshire Hathaway, and Wells Fargo make combined. So this is a massive thing. It is growing. It is pervasive. It is impacting every nation in the world. But at its base, it's the sale of souls for exploitation in labor, sex, and organ trade.
Well, you've mentioned the different types. Here in the United States, what are the likely types of trafficking that our members would encounter within a healthcare setting?
Well, I would say every single type here in the United States, except for perhaps organ trafficking. We really haven't seen that take hold in the U.S. yet, except for through the form of our citizens going abroad to buy organs off the black market, in which case they are participating knowingly or not and often organ trafficking in those nations. Here in the United States, we're looking at both labor and sex trafficking of adults and minors, foreign nationals, and U.S. citizens. And healthcare professionals are perhaps in the most important place in our communities here in the United States to encounter this. There's lots of reasons for that. I'm sure we'll unpack it. But I can tell you that every single time I've trained healthcare providers, which is many, many times now, coast to coast in this nation, we begin the day by having a general understanding of this issue, and we end the day by many different healthcare professionals raising their hands going, well, wait a minute, what about this individual we just encountered 2 days ago? Or what about this sort of pattern of individuals we're seeing in our ER department, et cetera? And they are encountering trafficking every day and they just don't realize it.
Yeah, I've had the same experience myself as I have engaged in training healthcare professionals to recognize these victims in the past. But before we get into that, can you give us a little bit of an overview of what the current state of human trafficking is today here in the United States and a little bit across the world, if you can get into that?
Sure. So I will say that, you know, the data that's out there, I would consider to be highly conservative in our projections on this and limited in our line of sight. But the current folks in the world who try to count how many victims there are in the world put that figure at about over 40 million souls globally who are experiencing labor sex trafficking. No one really has a count for how many individuals are experiencing organ trafficking yet. Here in the United States, I would say really no one has a clue on how many individuals are really being trafficked, but I will anecdotally, or not really even anecdotally, say I'll give you a couple studies here. So for about a decade, the United States federal agencies were putting out numbers like, well, perhaps 100,000, perhaps up to 300,000 children here in the United States, these are U.S. citizens, are being trafficked within our borders. That caused a lot of alarm, and so there was quite a scramble to try to figure out what was the actual number there. I don't think we have figured it out. But Texas, back about 3 years ago also, their attorney general's office did a deep dive, multi-year study to try to figure out how many victims of human trafficking were in Texas alone. And their figure was 313,000 victims in the state of Texas. Now that adults and children, foreign nationals and citizens, labor and sex trafficking. But by any conservative extrapolation of that figure, we are somewhere closing into perhaps even up to a million souls here in the U.S. who are experiencing this. So I've been in communities and states that are identifying maybe two cases per year. And then this is in the Midwest. And then you do all the trainings that are required, especially of healthcare professionals. And all of a sudden, identification soared to over 600 the next year. And that's not because it just started to happen. It's just because we just started to see it. So it's growing. It's impacting millions. And we may be even approaching 1 million souls here in the U.S.
I'm sure that those numbers are not just surprising to our listeners, but probably shocking. So that means hundreds of thousands of individuals around the United States that potentially are being trafficked at any one time. What is it that makes a person vulnerable? Why are the numbers so high?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And it kind of gets at the heart of the reason why trafficking even happens. So at this kind of pervasive level, right? So it's one thing to say that one person wants to harm another. And of course, all of us who've been in working on behalf of those in need have been fighting that for decades, right? Child abuse and domestic violence, et cetera. But all of a sudden we've got this sort of culmination of all the horrible things and horrible forms of exploitation that could take place in this form of human trafficking, which tends to target, traffickers are targeting individuals in this nation and everywhere, who are experiencing vulnerabilities in their life that others in our communities are not seeing and not taking care of. And so a trafficker kind of comes in often with promises, not with kidnapping. Now that happens, and that's what sort of sensationalized, right, in our movies and social media. But most often, and especially in this country, a trafficker is someone who has built a relationship over time with the individual that they are getting ready to exploit. So these traffickers are saying to this individual, hey, we see that you don't have a housing solution. We see that you're homeless, for instance. We see that you don't have family. You're a child aging out of foster care. I'll be your family, right? They start to make all these promises to these individuals in vulnerable places. And then the whole story switches, the whole situation switches when they switch to using force, fraud, or coercion to force that individual into being exploited for labor or sex trafficking. Now, in the United States, those who are most vulnerable to human trafficking in our country are by far our children who are in and aging out of foster care. So that's the number one vulnerable population in this country. You know, following that would be individuals who are experiencing domestic violence and isolation, people who come through years of exploitation, maybe through child abuse, et cetera. And certainly individuals who are coming to our country from abroad who don't understand our laws or the protections that they have. And I want to sit on that, if I can, Jeff, for just a second, because I think the myth here is that individuals, foreign nationals who are being trafficked in our country, somehow, you know, we're willing participants in that. And you need to understand that, according to even the most recent studies on this, over 80% of those individuals and foreign nationals being trafficked in the United States came here legally. They filled out all the right paperwork to try to have a student visa or a tourist visa or a work visa. And when they arrived, what happened was that whole pathway was being constructed by traffickers. So they thought they were coming here legally, or maybe they even did. But once they landed here, their papers were taken, their identification documents were taken. They were told they owed this massive debt that they're not going to have to pay off, that they never will. And then the whole thing turns into a nightmare and they have no way of reaching out. And so this is, if you want to put it all in one big bucket, those most vulnerable to human trafficking are those without safety nets and supports in our communities. And that's people we don't see, but traffickers do.
I'm so glad you talked about briefly the fact that the vast majority of these victims are not kidnapped like is so often portrayed on TV and in the movies. Before I really got into this, I really didn't understand also that the number of children that are exposed to abuse, which is, of course, as you mentioned, the feeder for youth into this whole issue of sexual exploitation. But let's kind of turn now to what we mentioned briefly earlier, and that is, why is this such an important topic for healthcare professionals to know about?
Oh, I could go for days on that question, Jeff. But the main thing is that healthcare providers have perhaps the most critical role to play in identifying victims in your community. And the reason for that, if it's not already obvious in our conversation, is because victims are not seeking assistance from law enforcement or lawyers or social workers in your community. They're not raising their hand for help to those kinds of individuals who may have already received training on this, although we have a long way to go on that. Mm-hmm. But they are seeking help from healthcare providers at some point, and at many points, in fact. Victims of human trafficking, and these studies, let's pull down to the United States because these studies come from U.S. studies, but victims in the United States are raising their hand for help in healthcare settings on average 15 to 18 times before they are properly identified as a victim. Mm. Mm. So they are seeking help. They are coming to your healthcare settings. And those healthcare settings include emergency departments, dental offices, urgent care facilities, OBGYN offices, any kind of local walk-in clinic, even alternative healers and primary care offices, pediatricians and women's health clinics. All of those survivors in this nation have said, we sought help, and they were not seeking help, by the way, for like colds. They were seeking help for broken bones and forced botched abortions and STI treatments and all kinds of things. But what was happening in the healthcare setting was a doctor was treating this as a singular instance of a thing. And in even some of the worst cases, believing that this individual with them was a trusted guardian or parent even, and were treating the symptom and then handing them back to the trafficker. So this is happening all across our country, and it's the healthcare providers more than anyone else in the community who are in a position to see it and stop it.
You know, another number that I've kind of stuck in the back of my mind from a study was that really 2/3 overall, if you take all of the different types of trafficking victims, 2 out of 3 will encounter, as you mentioned, on multiple occasions healthcare professionals while they're being trafficked. And as you mentioned, it's the only sector of our society that is regularly encountering these victims. So if we aren't able to recognize them and help them, nobody else will. So I'm glad that you also mentioned that there are different settings, because I think a misconception is that the only place they're going to be seen is in the emergency department or maybe in an outpatient clinic, but actually it could be anywhere within a private practice or otherwise. So that really gets into my next question, and that is, what are some common myths and misperceptions that keep us as healthcare professionals from identifying these victims?
Yeah, so I think probably they are the myths and misconceptions that are common to us all, right? So in our understanding of this issue, and I place those in three buckets. So myth number one is, where is human trafficking happening? And we tend to think only urban cities or developing nations. That's where it's really highly concentrated. Otherwise, it must be really sparse. And the answer is, this is happening literally every place. Mm-hmm. I have helped communities of 50 people who are combating trafficking to obviously metropolises who are doing that. And as of, I think, 2 years ago now, human trafficking operations by our law enforcement have now taken place in all 50 states, all 50 states of this country. So this is not an issue that is only happening in urban settings or developing nations that's going to keep us from believing what we're seeing, you know, if we're somewhere other than those places, if we think that's where it's happening. Myth number two is the who bucket. Who is human trafficking impacting? And the myth surrounding this one, we've already slightly referenced, is that it's only foreign nationals and young girls. And the answer is, yes, of course, foreign nationals. And that would be true in our nation and everywhere, right? Are highly vulnerable to trafficking and are being trafficked. And yes, young girls. But it is literally anyone. So an adult male can be trafficked. A young boy, obviously, can be trafficked. Your kids that go to your child's school may be experiencing trafficking in the evening and showing up the next day at school because their parents are trafficking their child to feed their opioid addictions at night. We're working with communities struggling with that right now. So it's really anyone. We've got to kind of open our eyes to this could happen everywhere and to anyone. And then, of course, the third is, how is human trafficking happening? And we get these pictures because we're learning about this through, you know, social media or movies, that it's abductions and chains. That's how trafficking takes place. And the truth is, we've already talked about it, this is often a process by someone that someone knows or has come to trust. These are invisible chains, force, fraud, and coercion. Now, are there instances of chains and trafficking? Of course there are, but that's not the overwhelming majority of the situation. And there's an awful lot of confusion, by the way, and hear me, healthcare providers, on this. Most trafficking victims don't know they're trafficking victims. Mm-hmm. They don't even know that word. They know, for instance, that maybe I was a kiddo who was abused by my parents, and I spun out into 14 foster care homes. And then I met someone on the street when I ran away. Finally, I couldn't handle it anymore, who said that he was going to take care of me. But now he's kind of making me do things. And I think I love him, but he's, you know, also trying to, he's also saying, I have to do this. And there's no way I could get out. So all of this gets really messy. And that individual is experiencing trafficking, but they're not going to call it that. And if you were to say, hey, are you a human trafficking victim? They're not going to maybe know what you're even talking about. So there's confusion here. There are invisible chains, and it's the healthcare providers in a position to see that firsthand in your communities everywhere.
I'm glad you made that point again. One thing that I've often mentioned in talks is that the victim has no idea also that the activity is illegal. Their perception is going to be that something unfair, unjust is happening to them, but they had no idea and no reason to have an idea that actually the trafficker can be arrested at that moment in time if, in fact, the truth were to come out. But I do think we've got the attention, or at least I hope we have the attention of all our listeners. So what are some of the signs and indications that a patient that a healthcare professional is seeing might, in fact, be in a trafficking scenario?
So there are so many resources for this, and I'm sure we'll talk about those here in a minute to get you to be trained. But I kind of break it down for healthcare providers and indicators that you're going to see, just generally speaking, in your healthcare setting, kind of swimming around this individual. But also there's the health impact of human trafficking in that individual's life, each of these being not just symptoms that you're going to be caring for, but maybe red flags, especially if you're seeing a cluster of these things. happening in this individual's life. So on the physical health, you know, side of this, we've got the health impact of human trafficking that you're likely to see are neurological issues, dental, certainly injury and abuse, self-harm, substance abuse, exposure-related injuries. That's really common in labor trafficking situations. So let me stop there for a second. If all of a sudden, I work in communities where all of a sudden, you know, some of your foreign national population are showing up at your healthcare settings and they all have these burns, you know, they'll have some common work-related, exposure-related injuries. And they're talking about the fact that they all kind of work, when you ask, maybe they're a little vague, maybe they don't even know where they are exactly, but they work locally at some sort of factory or agricultural farm. These should be signs that something really wrong is going on in that community, not just accidental injuries here. So you have diet-related and gastrointestinal physical health. On the mental health, it's stress and anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts, psychological disorders, disassociation, PTSD and nightmares. Sexual and reproductive health would be STDs and STIs. Obviously, pregnancies, many, multiple miscarriages and abortions, trauma to sexual organs and maternal and infant complications. Now you can see how we could miss this because these are, you know, sort of common indicators of the general population. But when you start to see them happening, multiple of these happening in an individual's life, and please know, survivors report on average over 10 concurrent conditions here in this list I've just laid out. So those are going to be the health impact indicators. You start to see multiple things of, you know, happening in this individual's life, it should set off a red flag. But the other indicators would be kind of swimming around this individual a little bit. So when you're asking things like, you know, hey, what's your relationship to this person who came in, who's with you? And that seems to be very vague. Or if this individual is speaking constantly for them, not really wanting them to speak, but mm-hmm. speaking for them, or maybe they're pretending they don't know, maybe they don't know, you know, English. And so they've got a quote unquote translator, you know, there who's just constantly hovering. If they're saying things like they're geographically confused, right, about their situation, that which might mean that they're being, you know, traveling quite a bit. I was recently training a pregnancy clinic out in the mountain states. About halfway into the training, they said, you know, one of the directors there raised her hand and said, wait a sec, we're getting a lot of girls, young, you know, kind of teen, you know, 19, 20 year olds coming in recently, saying that they're girlfriends of these guys on these oil fields in the state next to us. And they were just in to visit their boyfriend for 2 weeks, but realized they were pregnant. But we've seen this a number of times. Is this trafficking? You know, and so you're looking, of course it is likely trafficking, right? So you're looking for patterns here that are taking place. And the best thing you could do is try to separate, especially if someone's there, you know, speaking for them, kind of try to find a way to separate them so that you can start to have a conversation about what's going on.
Those are all very good indicators and ideas of how to begin to recognize that and really raise alarms in your own mind as a healthcare professional, at least the question. This is something that needs to be investigated a little further. But I want to shift a little bit and bring up really the topic of the day, which is the COVID-19 pandemic. And how is this impacting the issue of human trafficking?
Yeah, so we're having this conversation a lot with healthcare providers right now, mainly because here in the U.S. especially, although abroad, I was just with a bunch of doctors in the Philippines, healthcare is just wrecked right now. You know, we're just overburdened. And so the idea of trying to integrate new trainings on human trafficking feels impossible right now. But here's the thing. Trafficking is growing because of this pandemic. And we, even in this country, we've seen a 400% increase in online commercial sexual exploitation of children in our nation. This is holding across the world, same in the Philippines. And the reason for this, so, you know, early on into the pandemic, individuals were calling me saying, hey, is there some sort of silver lining here? This means that somehow trafficking might be lessening around the globe. Here's the problem. Traffickers are entrepreneurs in the very worst sense of the word. Mm-hmm. They will find a way to exploit people who are in, and here's the key, vulnerable moments in their lives or have compounding vulnerable lives. And this pandemic has exponentially increased the number of vulnerabilities that there are in the general population, as well as the number of vulnerabilities present in individuals' lives. And so you know, when we start to lose our housing because we lost our job, because our business had to shut down too long or can't seem to make a profit right now, all of these things start to stack, which lead to an opportunity for traffickers to come in and promise something that might meet that need and then turn it into a nightmare.
Ashley, can you speak a little bit to the importance of advanced preparation then within the healthcare setting to really be able to better identify and potentially rescue these victims?
It's critical. I mean, the idea that somehow we're going to tackle this well when we finally it's finally in front of us is not a good idea. Here's the thing. You are very likely already seeing victims in your healthcare setting. And so we need to move from a reactive stance to a proactive stance here, because several things need to be ready to be implemented and deployed when you do identify a potential victim. And that includes everything from the identification and assessment tools that you might utilize in that moment to the protocols that you're going to deploy, both maybe even in the front office, if they have someone there with them who might be a perpetrator, to all the way to, you know, how you're caring for this individual who is experiencing high trauma and might not really understand what's going on, to the partnerships that you need to have in place so that you're not just caring for this individual right in this moment, but you're able to trigger your local task force, your local law enforcement, the partners who can provide wraparound services for this individual once that proper identification has been made. So there's a lot of dominoes here that need to start falling into place once you make an identification, and you've got to proactively just go ahead and set that whole process up and those partnerships and those protocols, or we'll be scrambling in a moment and may end up having to let someone walk right back into a situation of harm when we could have intervened. And that's a terrible feeling to have taken place. So be proactive. Even if you don't think you're seeing it yet, go ahead and get those protocols set up. And there are lots of tools available to support you. Don't feel like you've got to go whiteboard this, you know, somehow. There are tons of tools, good information out there that you can attach yourself to get that started.
Yeah, one tool that I was honored to be part of preparing is a toolkit for taking any healthcare organization through the process of developing a comprehensive response protocol, and that can be found at healtrafficking.org. You just go to their website and then put in and look for the response protocol, and it's a PDF file that can be downloaded at no cost. So, but you're right, there are many others as well, and that's a good place to start. I did want to remind our listeners that January is National Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and that's one of the reasons we're having this conversation. So as we begin to kind of wrap up, what, Ashley, are some ways that healthcare professionals can begin to engage in the fight against trafficking? What do you think they should do first in terms of this whole fight if they've now learned more and they become passionate about getting involved?
So I think learning, taking a moment to learn, increase our knowledge is a critical first step. And so go grab that toolkit that Jeff just mentioned to you. We also have worked with Anthem here in this country to develop a healthcare series. So it's called Healthcare Response to Human Trafficking Series. It's a 5-part online course series that is going to walk you through all these steps, in which we highlight all the resources and tools available, including the toolkit that Dr. Jeff just mentioned to you. So if you would go to learnwithjusticeu.com/healthcare, you could start that journey there. But find a way to increase your learning first. And then reach out to your local task force or your local law enforcement who are working on these issues in your community. So most states now will have some task force sitting in the attorney general's office, maybe even in the sheriff's office. You're going to want to start to have those conversations for two reasons. One is you want to learn what really is going on in your community from their perspective. That's going to give you insight into the type of victims you're likely seeing in your healthcare settings. And the second reason is you could be an amazing resource for victims and survivors in your community. Law enforcement might just not know they could call you to help with this medical need or this dental need or this gynecologic. I'm messing that word
gynecologic.
up.
Gynecologic.
Thank you. That type of need that's so common for especially obviously women and youth. So take time to learn and then reach out and start those conversations. And I promise you, you're going to find ways that you can immediately take action and then maybe some long-term strategies too.
Well, Ashley, I don't know about you, but one of my favorite verses in the Old Testament that deals with this particular issue is found in Zechariah chapter 7, verses 9 and 10, where Zechariah writes, "This is what the Lord Almighty says, administer true justice, show mercy and compassion to one another, do not oppress the widow or the fatherless, the alien or the poor." And the reason I like that is it captures really all the vulnerable populations that we've been talking about. So I just want to thank you, Ashley, for joining us on CMDA Matters. I think this is going to be very enlightening for many of our listeners, and I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Jeff. It's just a joy to be with you, and thank you all to who are listening in. If you have any questions, just knock on our door. We'll be excited to help you take the next step.
Well, I was joking with Jeff Barrows this week about how it was almost providential in a way that I got Omicron because I wasn't able to be here in the studio for that interview. And Jeff and Ashley just knocked it out of the park, I think, in this discussion to help us understand how we are at the forefront of making a difference in fighting human trafficking. Hundreds of thousands of people are being trafficked in our nation right now, and it's only getting worse. Because as we heard of the pandemic, those numbers are staggering and they are sobering, especially the number of children who are being caught up in the atrocities of human trafficking. One of the most important points that I took away from the conversation was the information that Ashley just shared with us, and that is the importance of being proactive, especially in the midst of the growing numbers of victims due to this pandemic. As healthcare professionals, and especially as Christians who are called to care for the most vulnerable among us, we are being called to step into this arena and proactively start learning now so that we can see the signs and know when victims of human trafficking are face to face with us in the exam room and in our hospitals. Just as she told us, we play a critical role in identifying victims in our local communities. Well, CMDA has a variety of resources to help you get started or to learn more on this topic. And as we recognize this month of January as National Human Trafficking Prevention Month, I want to strongly encourage you to start taking advantage of these resources. And the best place to start is our wonderful CMDA Learning Center. You've heard me talk about the Learning Center before, so I hope you're starting to become familiar with all of the continuing education credits that you can earn through this free member benefit. Within the Learning Center are two specific courses that I want to mention to you. First is an article that was published just last year in the spring 2021 edition of our magazine called CMDA Today, written by Drs. Paul Glazer and Joyce Lowe. This article is entitled Common Psychiatric Consequences of Human Trafficking on Children and Adolescents. Paul and Joyce will help provide you with a framework of knowing just how to establish mental health care as part of your management of children and adolescents who've been victims of human trafficking. The second course in the Learning Center is a 12-module series developed by CMDA's Commission on Human Trafficking. And this course gives you an introduction to human trafficking here in the U.S. It explains how you can spot the signs of patients who are being trafficked. It helps you discern how to both help and treat these patients, and much, much more. If you haven't taken the time to go through these modules yet on the Learning Center, will you commit to doing so in the next month? I think it'll be incredibly valuable to you, and it's a wonderful step. You can proactively learn so much more. CMDA members can access this course for absolutely no cost, though there is a fee if you're a non-member. While it is largely targeted at healthcare professionals, everyone, we believe, can glean some benefits from it. So if you'd like to share this course with others outside of healthcare, the first module can be accessed for free by using the coupon code GREATERLOVE. That's all one word, GREATERLOVE. Again, you can find both of these courses and more in the CMDA Learning Center at cmda.org/learning. Our CMDA Commission on Human Trafficking exists to equip, motivate, send, and transform our CMDA members in their role to abolish human trafficking within the U.S. and abroad. You can visit cmda.org/human trafficking, one word, to learn more about the commission and other resources that are available on their webpage. That's cmda.org/human trafficking. CMDA's Global Health Outreach, known commonly as GHO, is also engaging in this issue of trafficking on some of their short-term mission trips. GHO sends teams around the world to countries including El Salvador, East Africa, India, the Pacific, Central Asia, Nicaragua, the Middle East, and many other parts. Through these trips, we disciple participants, we grow national churches, we share the gospel, and of course, provide care to the poor and needy. GHO teams minister in outpatient primary care medicine and dentistry, and in small and large hospitals to provide surgical services. Some of those trips specifically focus on working with our national partners to help treat victims of human trafficking. So if you know someone who's a healthcare student or an undergrad student, or you're just interested in using the skills and resources that our Lord has entrusted to you, you can visit cmda.org/GHO to learn more and find out a trip that works in your upcoming schedule. Well, speaking of missions, there's still time to register for Remedy 22. Our focus is on bringing the hope and healing of Jesus Christ to a world that's in crisis, whether across the street or around the world. Remedy 22 will challenge you to pursue God's call on your life to be on mission. So join us at California Baptist University on February 26th and 27th for a weekend of encouragement, refreshment, and heartfelt challenge. There's even a breakout session planned to talk just about human trafficking. So don't wait to register. Visit cmda.org/remedy to reserve your spot today. I've got one additional event, if you just have a moment, to tell you about, and that's the 2022 Faith and Medicine Conference that's being co-sponsored by our CMDA Atlanta chapter. On February 4th and 5th, join your colleagues as we focus on redeeming love in healthcare. This conference is about helping individuals find ways to meet current needs with the hope of the gospel and the truth of Scripture. For more information, just visit faithandmedicine.org. As I wrap up today's episode, I'm excited to tell you about next week's guest. Well, you might just have heard about and watched The Chosen TV series that has been receiving such acclaim and positive ratings with nearly 350 million views around the globe. Well, next week, I'm joined by none other than Dallas Jenkins, who is the creator of the series and who just happens to be a speaker at our upcoming 2022 National Convention in Indianapolis, Indiana. He's joining me to give us a small preview of what he's going to be sharing at the upcoming convention, so make sure to come back next week. As always, if you'd like to suggest a future guest for the podcast, just email me at cmdamattersoneword@cmda.org. And if you like our podcast, just give us a 5-star rating and share us on your favorite social media platform today. I think that Jeff Barrows shared such a poignant verse at the end of today's interview, so I want to leave you sharing that scripture just one more time. Zechariah chapter 7, verses 9 and 10 says, "This is what the Lord Almighty said, administer true justice, show mercy and compassion to one another. Do not oppress the widow or the fatherless, the foreigner or the poor. Do not plot evil against each other." Our God's heart is broken by his vulnerable children who are being taken advantage of through the evils of human trafficking. I hope that today's interview has impressed on your heart, just as it has mine, that same call to show mercy and compassion to the vulnerable among us and help free them from the clutches of evil. And as you, listener, seek to help them, you will be bringing the hope and healing of Christ to the world. That's what matters to us at CMDA, and CMDA matters. We'll see you next week, Jehovah willing.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.